Blog Talk Radio.
Boys and Queens, presenting the Dynamic Ball DVD producer, originator of the Sneaker vs. Sneaker category, executive realness contestant, and member of the House of LaCroix, sweetie. He's either loved or hated and is broadcasting live all the way from ATL. Without further delay or hesitation, grab your nuts and squeeze your meat for the one and only Tom motherfucking Blumenthal.
All right, welcome to the show, everybody.
Welcome to the show. Welcome to the show. Today is Monday, September 22nd, 2008. You're listening to blogtalkradio.com/servethekids. I'm your host, Tom Blumenthal, LaCroix. And I want to thank everybody for joining me. I'm going to get into the show in just a moment. I'm just sending out some late Yahoo messages. And I do apologize, but I'm getting a late start tonight. We have a very interesting show lined up for you guys. I hope that you all do like what we have in store, because there's a lot of stuff brewing. There's a lot of controversy brewing, and I'm not talking about anything ballroom related. There's no ballroom scandal tonight, people. So this eliminate about, well, I won't say that, but if you were tuning in tonight expecting mess and drama and all of that stuff, we won't have any of that tonight. But we are going to discuss some very serious issues facing the nation, facing our country, and things that will affect your day-to-day well-being. So I'm going to try and give you all some information that will help y'all. But before we do that, I do want to welcome to the line right now, the one and the only, all the way from D.C., Ms. Aviance. Welcome to the line.
Hello, baby. How are you?
Doing great. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. A little jet lag, but I'm okay.
I bet.
Well, you know, it's one of those tough topics for a Monday.
You know what?
But the children need to be in the know.
They need to be in the know, and that's one of the reasons why we are doing this show. But I've already predicted that listenership and callers will drop tremendously tonight, because, of course, we're not talking about who had who and who fucked up who and all of that kind of stuff. We're talking about some real serious issues tonight. We're talking about all things politics and the election 2008 on the Tom Blumenthal Show tonight. So, Ms. Aviance, I can imagine that we won't have a lot of listeners tonight, and that may be a blessing in disguise, because at least we don't have to worry about the system crashing and the phone lines being jammed up all night.
Well, I think we might be a little surprised tonight. I think that most of the listenership is registered to vote and rearing to vote. What do you think?
Right. I'm hoping so.
All right.
I'm hoping so. I'm optimistic. I'll put it that way. But in any case, let me just kind of give you guys an overview of what I want to talk about tonight. Again, we are talking all things politics, and I do invite those who are informed listeners, I invite you all to call in and give me your views. For those of you all who may not be quite as in the know as others and you want to get some info, call me up with your questions regarding all things politics or anything related to the election 08. I do have some very interesting information to pass along to you guys regarding deadlines to register to vote and things of that nature in various states, various battleground states, because in a lot of states across the country, Ms. Aviance, particularly where there's a large population of Black Americans, we are seeing Obama possibly in position to win those states.
And that is fantastic and unheard of, but
absolutely
fantastic.
Absolutely. You know, I was talking to my grandmother who's almost 80. I was talking to her, yesterday? And I asked her, I said, Granny, did you ever think that you would live to see this, you know, a Black man this close? And she said, no, she never, ever thought she would be able to see such a thing take place. And I also called my great-grandmother, who's 102 years old, and she's about to turn 103 in November up in North Carolina. And I asked her, I said, Grandma Josie, did you ever think you'd see something like this in your lifetime? And she said, no, baby, I sure didn't think I would. So you're right, Ms. Aviance, we're on the brink of something historic, and I'm just so glad to be a part of it. You know, if Obama gets in there, I tell you, I'm taking off work. I'm doing everything I need to do. I'm clearing my schedule. I'm not going to no ball. I'm not doing whatever it is. Come the day of that inauguration, I'm going to be in D.C. on the Washington Mall to watch history take place. I plan
Absolutely.
On being there I wouldn't miss this for anything.
It's a wonderful time to be alive in America right now. This is a very exciting period for all people, and especially African Americans. And this is a moment that I think most African Americans have been waiting for all their lives. And if they haven't been waiting for this all their lives, then their parents and their parents' parents have been fighting for us to have the right not just to vote, but to be in a position to be elected into the White House, which, of course, is not named the White House for nothing.
Right, absolutely. Let's welcome to the show right now our other partner, Hanif Carter, all the way from the Midwest. Hanif?
Hey, what's cracking, sir?
Hanif, what's going on, baby?
Hey, Avias, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good.
That's what's up.
Hanif, welcome to the show. We're talking tonight about all things politics and election 08.
Okay, that'll be cool.
Yeah, I do want to remind everybody real quick that, Ms. Abjad, do you remember Zim Van Adams we had on the show a few weeks back? Who did that spectacular documentary on YouTube about being young, black, and gay in America?
Yes.
Well, Zim has put together another part of this series has just been completed and released over the weekend. And
wow.
this particular part of the series features C.J. Mugler. He's being interviewed on his life experience of being young, black, and gay, and also being a part of the ballroom scene, and how that has affected his life and shaped his world and things of that nature. So I just thought I would mention that to everybody who's listening, that if you guys liked the first set of installments in that series, you're going to love this one. I had the chance to watch it over the weekend, Ms. Avias and Hanif, and I must say I really did enjoy. You can really see Zim has really put a lot of hard work into it. And I would just ask everybody out there to support Zim. Go on to YouTube, punch in Zim Van Adams or punch in Young Black and Gay in America, and go check out the second part of this series that he's doing.
Now, this part is featuring C.J. Mugler, which we'll say congratulations to him for being a part of that project.
Right,
but how do you pull it up on YouTube, the second part?
Go to YouTube and just punch in Young Black and Gay in America, and it should come up. And let me go to YouTube right now so I can look at it. I can tell you exactly what it's listed under. I don't want to give out the wrong info on there. Give me just a second on that, okay? Let me take a look
All right.
at it. But I am going to work on that and get that info.
We do everything in real time here, baby. It's all live.
Absolutely. While I look at that, Hanif, tell us how your weekend was out in the Midwest.
Well, you know, Tom, I was kind of bombarded. You know, Rhonda had forwarded me some of her work, so, you know, I've been kind of tied up doing a little traveling.
Come on. Okay, I won't ask any questions.
Well, other than that, I've been doing pretty good. How was your weekend?
Oh, it was great. It was great. Okay, I found the part two of the series.
Okay.
It's Young, Black, and Gay in America, and it's, I think you can punch in Sarai Speaks, and that's spelled S-Y-R-A-I Speaks.
S-Y-R-A-I?
No, S, like Sam. S-Y-R-A-I Speaks.
Okay.
And that'll take you to the next part of his series, Young, Black, and Gay in America. And it's really fascinating. So I hope everybody gets an opportunity to take a look at that. And send Zim a note or something, an email. Let him know how you like it and encourage him, because he's one of us, and we want to encourage him to go all the way with this thing.
Amen.
Now, as I predicted, the lines are not as jammed, but we will hold out that some people will take an interest in this political issue and call in. Let me go to my first thing that I want to talk about tonight, and it's regarding the death penalty. And there's a case here in Georgia, in case you all hadn't heard about this. It's been all over the national news, particularly as of this weekend. Al Sharpton has now gotten involved in this case, but it's the case of Troy Anthony Davis, who is on death row here in Georgia and is scheduled to be executed tomorrow at 7 p.m. for... He was convicted of murdering a Savannah, Georgia police officer back in the 80s, I believe. The interesting thing about this, Ms. Aviance and Hanif, is that a lot of people now believe that they have the wrong man in jail for this crime, and it's very likely, very well possible, that they could be executing an innocent man. Now,
which
I'll
won't be the first time.
Won't be the first time, right. I'll just say right off the bat, I am not a supporter of the death penalty under any circumstances at all. I think it's barbaric. I think it's state-sponsored murder. And I don't think that we should be in the business of killing people no matter what their crime was. And I just don't agree with the death penalty. But having said
that, I agree with letting them suffer. Let them live and suffer and live with what they've done.
Well, but in this case, the man is very likely innocent based on all the new evidence that's come up. But they've taken it to the Georgia Supreme Court. They have refused him a new trial. They've taken it to the U.S. Supreme Court, and it's still pending there, waiting for the U.S. Supreme Court to even say whether or not they'll take the case. And so even with the case pending before the U.S. Supreme Court to even get an answer as to yes or no, we'll hear your case, Georgia has moved forward in scheduling an execution date for tomorrow. So I went last week. There was a march and rally. Amnesty International came in. They're on top of this case. They came in last week, and we had a march and rally from downtown Atlanta down Auburn Avenue, which is the historic Sweet Auburn district, all the way down past Martin Luther King's old church to Ebenezer Baptist Church, the new Ebenezer Baptist Church. So we marched and protested trying to save this man's life. And
wow.
And hoping that, you know, somebody would hear our plea. And basically all they're asking for, all the family's asking for, is a new trial, or at least to hear the new evidence. You know, the interesting thing about this case, Ms. Aviance, is that there were 9 eyewitnesses who testified at this man's trial that they witnessed him shoot this police officer. Out of those 9 witnesses, 7 of them have now come forward to recant and say they were either pressured by the police or by the prosecutor to eyewitness, to eyeball this person as the suspect.
Right.
So you have just about all of the witnesses now recanting, saying that, hey, this was not the man. He didn't kill this officer. I was pressured to say it was him. I was threatened to say it was him. And in the face of all of that, they still have this man on death row. Now, in addition to that, one of the other eyewitnesses who said, oh, by the way, he was the guy who did it, well, he's the other suspect. And of course, he's not coming forward to say, oh, it wasn't him, because he's the other person that people are now saying it was him.
Wow,
so,
that bitch.
I just think it's, you know, shame on the state of Georgia that in 2008, in modern, you know, civilization, we still use a practice that just about everywhere else in the world is banned. I mean, you look at some of the most backwards third world countries, so-called, don't even have the death penalty. America is still, you know, behind the times when it comes to things like the death penalty. And for people, and let me say this too, Ms. Aviance and Hanif, for people who are listening right now and you're thinking, well, I don't care about that, that doesn't affect me. Well, let me tell you something, people. If you're poor and black in America, and not even if you're black, but if you're poor in America, it can happen to you. Trust me. It can be you. It can be one of your relatives. Because in America, and especially in the criminal justice system, and I'm telling you from what I know, having been a law enforcement officer, it is not about color in America when it comes to going to prison. It's about being either having resources or not. It's about being rich.
Right.
Or it's about
if you have no representation and you cannot afford representation, any representation that is assigned to you is not going to fight for your freedom
absolutely.
And your liberty. It's just not going to happen.
Absolutely. And you know what? And that's why I'm convinced that with all of the stuff that we see going on in America today, with the stock market going down and this big bailout they're talking about on Wall Street, with these companies going belly up, I'm convinced that we're in a day and time now where race really is not going to matter real soon, because it's really going to boil down to the haves and the have-nots.
And the
have-nots.
Yep.
And so it won't matter if you're black, white, or what. If you got money, you got privilege. If you broke, well, you just better get in line with the rest of the broke people and just wait.
And you know what, Tom? I'll tell you something. No, white people look down on poor white people more than they do on black people. That's one thing. If you're a poor white person, oh, they really going to treat you like shit, your own kind.
Yeah, so, I mean, although race is still something that's, very much in play in everything that we do in today's society, every aspect of life, I believe race does matter. But I'm telling y'all, we are moving fast to a time where race is not going to matter as much as what kind of money you can bring to the table, what type of resources you have. I mean, we've already seen that. That's how O.J. got off the first time, because he had the money to pay for those lawyers. Imagine if O.J. was some regular Joe Blow who had been accused of murdering two white folks. He probably would have been put to death also.
That's the R. Kelly.
There you go, R. Kelly. Not certain, Ms. Aviance?
No, I was going to say, I'm not certain if the late Johnny Cochran did not do some of that work pro bono. I'm not 100% sure if that happened or not. It appears that he did, based on just some of the things that I've read and researched about it, that he did
right.
do some of it pro bono. But he did get a hefty, as much money as he could get from O.J. at that time. He did collect that, and then the rest probably was pro bono.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. He may have done some pro bono, but I can guarantee you he got something out of that. But just imagine if it was me trying to hire a Johnny Cochran. I wouldn't even be able to get an appointment with him, because the retainer fee would be so expensive, I wouldn't even be able to afford the retainer, let alone the hourly rate for him to actually do the work on my case.
Right.
So, I mean, it does matter, people. It matters the type of resources you have. So I say all that to say that in regards to Troy Anthony Davis, for those of you who are, who may be inclined to send an email or write the governor here in Georgia, I strongly urge you to go on Google and type in Troy Anthony Davis and see how you can help, because now we want to sit around the computer and the telephone and wait for the latest tea to drop and the latest gossip and that kind of thing. Well, tonight, people, we're talking about some real serious, real-life issues.
And when it comes to the death penalty, not to cut you off, Tom, I'm not for the death penalty in general, but I do believe that, just like the Bible mentions, and not just the Bible, many other holy books and such, say that those that live by the sword, they often die by the sword. And not
right.
that the state-organized sword is something that we should have in place, but I believe that when you do things like that to innocent people, a lot of times the universe will get you back. You will probably die by the sword yourself, and of course this state-organized and state-supported murder is a way that people who are, because all of these laws are influenced by religion,
right.
and especially in Virginia, where I'm from originally, that is the motivation for almost every law, like religious belief, that if you kill, you should be killed. That's why they have the death penalty.
Right, absolutely. You're right. And that's unfortunate, because a lot of times people use religion to,
manipulate
voters.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. And that's unfortunate. Very unfortunate.
Very unfortunate.
I just got a text message from somebody saying that the callers may not be as many tonight because it's the season premiere of Heroes. And I understand Heroes is a very popular show among the gay community. I've never watched Heroes before. I have no idea what that show is about. So, Ms. Aviance, have you ever seen that show?
Yes. Heroes is about people coming into some superpowers and such, but it's just a deeper thing. It's an organized thing why these people come into these superpowers. I don't know the whole premise of it. I watched a little bit of it in the very beginning, but not this new season. It didn't strike me enough.
I just got a text message from Rico Escada, who just sent me some very interesting statistics. And I want to read these statistics to you. As of February 2004, 113 inmates on death row had been found innocent and released from death row. Let me repeat that. 113 death row inmates found to be innocent and released from death row. Now imagine, Ms. Aviance Hanif, if those people had been executed. We have no idea how many innocent people may have already been put to death.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, tons of people have met their death behind, you know,
right,
screwed up DNA results and all kinds of stuff like that. Absolutely.
Right.
You know, and we'll never be able to take those folks back out of the grave and introduce them back into society and apologize and give them some form of reparations and all of that kind of stuff. That will never happen. It is up to us. This is why it's important for us to vote, because it's up to us to set new rules and new standards for what we want to see happen in America.
And at least people, at least if, you know, if you put somebody in prison that's innocent, I mean, that's bad. Well, at least if you find out 10 or 15 years later they're actually innocent, as, you know, happens a lot. You see that happen a lot, too. Well, at least they're still alive, you know. I'd rather get out of prison 15, 20 years later and be alive than to be put to death for a crime I didn't do. You know what I mean?
Right.
So that's why we don't understand here in Georgia, okay, what's it going to hurt to give this man a hearing? Let's review the evidence, take a look at this case one more time. If it turns out he is actually still, you know, guilty, then okay. I mean, I'm still against the death penalty. But at least you've exhausted all possibilities, all avenues to make sure that we have the right person on death row. And that's why I don't understand it here. And what really troubles me, Ms. Avias and Hanif, is that our attorney general here in Georgia is a Democrat one, and he's black, too. I can't figure it out for the life of me, but I've already made my mind. I'm not voting for this attorney general. I didn't vote for him the last time because of what he tried to do to Jernarlo Wilson. You remember Jernarlo Wilson was the high school senior who had sex with that girl in the hotel room, and they wanted to send him to prison for 10 years. And he finally got out after they overturned his conviction. So I haven't voted for this man since then, and I just, you know, I don't plan on it, but. Let me go back to the statistics.
Hey, Tom, not to cut you off. Yeah. I'm just watching something on Hannity and Combs. It's a new poll that suggests that racism might hurt Obama in the polls in certain states, but I wait to segue back into that subject. I just wanted to throw that in there.
Yeah, I put a bookmark on that, honey, because I didn't want to, because I heard about that study, too, that I think it was like 40% of white people say they still will not vote for Barack because he's black.
Well, yeah, but you know, there are a lot of, well, look at Iowa. Iowa is traditionally known as a Republican state. When he won that caucus, everyone was kind of shocked. So, and he's also up 7 points in Michigan, which is typically one of those states also.
Okay. Well, let's put a bookmark on that because we're about to transition into that in one moment. I want to say a couple more things on this death penalty thing. Rico sent me some more statistics that 13 death row inmates of that 113 were exonerated by the use of DNA. And let me give you guys a breakdown on this, on the exonerations in terms of race. Of those 113 exonerated, 66 were black, 50 were white, 12 were Latino, and 2 other. So, I mean, there you have it. The majority of these people on death row, first of all, they're black anyway because they're poor and don't have resources to fight off these prosecutions. Some of them that are unjust. These rogue prosecutors, like we saw down in Gina, Louisiana, when I went down there. So there's reason to be concerned about the death penalty, period. And people, if you don't think it affects you, well, like my mother and my grandmother always used to tell me, Ms. Avias, just keep on living.
There you go.
Because at some point, what you think doesn't affect you, it'll knock on your door in some way,
whether it's
directly or indirectly.
And it's a very selfish position to take in life, to look at other people who are suffering and to feel that you are not being affected, and you don't feel a connection with just the human race in general.
Right.
That's a sad position to be in life, and many are that way. Many are that way. Not just gay. Many people in general do not feel a general connection to other human beings, even people that they pass on the streets, people that they ride the trains with every day, or ride the bus with, or work with in the same office. They feel no human connection. They are there to work, collect a paycheck, and go home and do whatever they do in their families, and not understand that, you know, we're in this thing together.
Right, absolutely. And a lot of people don't know that about me, Ms. Avias, but I am very much an activist. I mean, I've never met this man before, Troy Davis. Never met his family. But when I heard the call that they were having this protest in the march, I knew I had to be there because I know what it's like to have people jammed up in the criminal justice system. I have family caught up in it as well. I have friends. I mean,
right.
Especially for those of us in the ballroom, everybody knows somebody that's been to jail. So, and just because you go to jail doesn't mean you are guilty. People don't seem to understand that. You know, innocent people get accused of things all the time. And it's just a matter of, that, you know, that's why you're supposed to be innocent to prove guilty, because the state has to prove you did something wrong.
Right.
And a lot of times, if you're poor and black, they don't have to prove it. They just charge you, and you can't fight it, so guilty, you know. Or most people end up taking a plea, pleading guilty to crimes they didn't commit. You know, when I was a PO, I would say just 25 to 30%, maybe even a higher percentage, of my caseload of probationers were on probation for crimes they didn't commit.
Right.
Go ahead, Hanif.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. I'm just saying, I know how that goes, because when I got into a little trouble, and they were like, well, you know, we'll let you go home tomorrow when you go to court if you plead guilty and accept 2 years of probation. And, you know, come to find out, I still wind up sitting in jail another 30 days. If I would have known that, I would have just sat here and fought the case.
Yeah, that's what they do. I mean, it happens all the time. One of these days, I'm going to do a show about probation and how not to let the system keep you trapped, because probation is a way to keep you trapped to the system. But I'm going to tell y'all this. A lot of times what they do is they'll charge you with the crime, whether you did it or not, because a lot of these cops, and I know quite a few of them, and I know how they operate. And that's one of the reasons, Ms. Avias, why I had to get out of the law enforcement community, because I saw every single day how how police jam you up. And I couldn't be a part of it anymore. I mean, I'm serious. I literally went to work one day, and I had been dealing with a whole lot of other issues on the job. And I just decided, I said one day, I just can't do this anymore. I cannot be a part of this corrupt system any longer. I mean, it was. I don't want to go too off into it because it'll take me on a whole different subject. But I mean, literally, it made me sick every single day just to go to work. You know, I ended up getting an ulcer and all kinds of other problems because of it. And I finally said, you know what? Enough is enough. I can't be a part of this system anymore. But what they do is they trap you on probation. They arrest you, charge you with something that you didn't do. And, you know, most people can't afford to sit in jail 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, month, 2 or 3 months. Because by the time you get out, you've lost everything that you had on the street. You lost your apartment. If you had a car, you lost that. You know, I mean, 2 or 3 weeks in jail can really set you back if you're out struggling already trying to pay bills.
Right.
So when you go to court and the DA says, well, you know, we got you charged with 2 felonies, I'll drop it down to 1 if you just go ahead and plead guilty. We'll give you 3 or 4 years probation and pay a fine, because all they want is that money anyway, so they're going to give you a fine.
Yeah, so, that's what I was pissed off about.
Who in their right mind, if they're desperate enough to get out of jail, they'll just say, fuck it, I'll take the probation and pay the fine off, just let me out of jail. You go into court, plead guilty, and the same day you're out.
But you don't see
all of the other stuff on the back end that comes along with being on probation after you get out of jail. So
right.
It's really not easier than you. It's not as easy as people think it is to just take the easy way out and go. You know, they'll let you out today, and all my problems are over. Well, your problems have just began. If you think they're over, no, they're not over. Go ahead, Ms. Avias.
Well, I'm just saying it in the sense of, if you, in fact, did not do the crime and you do a plea deal, that's just staunch manipulation, you know, because there are times when people did do certain things and someone else may venture to say they got what they deserved. But for those who were unfairly judged or unfairly identified or something like that, and then they do a plea to something that goes on a permanent record.
Right. And you know what? And what a part of that, too, I can see right now, I'm going to have to do a criminal justice show one day so people can really get a sense of how the police and the DAs work, how this whole system works. But what that does, too, see, people don't realize prosecutors don't really care, most of them, don't care if you're innocent or not, because they're looking at the bigger picture. They're looking at a conviction rate.
Right.
You see, because DAs need to have something they can go back to the voters with and say, well, here's my conviction rate. I put this many people behind bars for these amount of crimes. That's what they break it down to look like. So they don't care about one or two folks that maybe got caught up by some bad cops on the street, you know, they planted some dope on them or something. They don't, they're not looking at all that. They don't care about that. And most, and the average citizen don't care about that either. All they want to know is that, is my community safe? Am I being protected? It's just like what happened after 9/11. The government scares the hell out of you, makes you think the terrorists are coming, and then next thing you know, Congress is ramming this Patriot Act down your throat and taking away all your freedoms, all of your, you know, liberties, your civil liberties are now gone. You know, they can search you, they can wiretap you now without having a court order. So that's how, you know, that's what happens when you allow fear to paralyze you. That's why I always tell people when you vote, don't vote based on emotion and fear, because the Republicans are real good at scaring people. But behind and underneath all that fear, there's no substance. That's how we ended up with 8 years of George Bush, because he has no substance. He's an airhead who used fear and an unjust, illegal war to trick people to vote for him. But I'm off that soapbox. Ms. Abiyat, anything on that?
Wow. I mean, that's a whole nother show.
Yeah.
In itself. I mean, just in itself. It really, really
is. If I said what I thought about George Bush right now, I probably had the feds at my door for about 2 seconds.
Well, I don't want to get stuck on criminal justice too long, but I did want to mention the case of Troy Davis, and I hope everybody checks that out. I was just sending a text message just now about a magazine called Details Magazine that did a big article last month about people on death row. So everybody, just keep Troy Davis in your prayers, and if you're inclined to, go to Google and see how you can look him up and send some words of support down here to the governor that we want this man off death row. At the very least, we want him to have another hearing just to make sure that he is, in fact, the guy. I just don't think that he is. So moving on to my next topic before we actually jump off into this whole election 08 thing. But let me stop the music for this, because this is something that has really pissed me off. But do y'all know Ms. Avianz and Hanif, for the last, I don't know, week, Georgia has been, not just Georgia, but the whole Southeast has been experiencing major, major gas shortages. And I'm telling y'all, if y'all think I'm joking, just turn on CNN.
Would that be due to the hurricane in Texas?
Yeah, it's due to the hurricane down in Texas. Apparently, after that Hurricane Ike came through, it disrupted the refineries. You know, they had to shut down the refineries and evacuate those people off the refineries, because they're out in the Gulf, you know, and the hurricane hit out there. So they had to get those workers off those refineries and oil rigs out in the Gulf. Well, in doing that, they shut down all the refineries in Texas. And the Southeast, particularly Georgia, gets most of its gasoline from the Gulf region. That's where most of our gas comes from. So because of this damn hurricane, we don't have no damn gas in Georgia. And ladies and gentlemen, if you're listening to me, call me from Georgia, please. Because I've almost ran out of gas on three different occasions, Ms. Avianz, I swear to you, driving around from gas station to gas station to gas station, and all of them are out of gas. And for it's absolutely amazing. And for those few gas stations that actually have gas, all they have is maybe one grade, like Supreme. They only have the premium grade, which is like going for $4.59, $4.79 a gallon.
Right.
So, I mean, can y'all imagine in a city as big as Atlanta is, and you're driving all around town on E, mind you,
and can't find anything but premium gas?
No, can't find gas at all. If you're lucky,
and
you can find
the premium
gas.
Right.
Are they putting a limit on, like, saying you can only get X amount of gallons?
Actually, they are. Some of the gas stations are now limiting how much individual buyers can purchase, because they want to make sure that it's enough for everyone. It's like that scene. I wasn't around back during the 70s when Jimmy Carter was president, but Ms. Avianz, do you remember pictures of long lines at the gas station when the gas was that's what it's like here. For like the few gas stations that have gas here in Atlanta, the lines are so fucking long to get the gas, and it's like you're sitting in the lines for like an hour waiting to get to the gas pump, and people are running out of gas while they're in line waiting for gas.
That's insanity.
Fucked up.
And you know who we got to thank for this? Bush. That bastard. I can't wait for this election. That's why we need change in America, and we need a new vision. And I can't understand for the life of me how anybody can vote Republican in this election, because we got the same. It's the same old mess.
brainwashing.
You know, and not only the same old mess, he's near death, and then we're going to be stuck with a deranged hockey mom that looks like by night she's a porno star.
Right.
No, you know what, Tom? Doesn't it look like she takes that chopstick out of her hair and throws, toss her hair like Cindy Crawford and takes her glasses off and unbutton her blouse and get real freaky at night?
Right.
She looks like a porn star.
I agree. But, you know, this is the kind of stupidity we're dealing with in this country.
But you know what? I mean, it's the way things are, and I don't like to, you know, always say things are spinoffs of the race card or whatever. I was in Chicago this past weekend, and God knows, you know, I love the Chicago girls. I have some very close Judies that live in Chicago that I went to college with. And can I tell you that when I was in Chicago, it was giving me very much of segregated tees.
Yep.
It was like dark-skinned people were huddled in this place. Light-skinned people were huddled over here. I was, like, gagging. Like, is this real in 2008? Is this really real? Is this my imagination? That, you know, everything was segregated off into little small, like Little Italy, some other Hispanic area. I'm like, what? I'm used to, you know, in D.C., everything is kind of like a melting pot altogether. People try to segregate themselves, but you can't keep people from wandering off into other sections and just mingling if they want to. And it was very, very disturbing.
Yeah, Chicago used to be a melting pot.
But I don't know.
What side of town are you on?
Don't get me to lie. I don't know the difference in the sides. I was visiting family and some friends, and I went there strictly for that purpose. But I can just tell you that from the places that we went to eat and everything, it just seemed to be segregated. Not that someone said you can't sit here. It just the looks you got and just the body language and stuff just wasn't as welcoming. And I'm not a club person, so a lot of people, when they go to Chicago, because Chicago is legendary for music, so a lot of people that go to Chicago, they go to party and hear good music and stuff, and they may not have this experience because they don't go out and touch the real culture of the city. They only go for the gay underground culture, and that's all they know. Like, oh, I had a great time in Chicago. Well, bitch, yeah, you did, because you was in the club all night long.
Yep.
But I'm talking about the real world, going downtown and walking around and patronizing businesses and such and seeing what the real everyday culture is.
Right, right. I wish that a lot of people would, you know, venture outside of our small little microcosm and experience more than just that, you know what I mean? Because I think we are, what's the word I'm looking for? I think we're sheltered to a certain degree. Like within our own community. Because I know a lot of people, when I used to live in Philadelphia, I knew guys in Philly who had not ever been outside their neighborhood.
Yep.
Yeah.
Seriously, never been outside of their neighborhood where they grew up. And you know, Philadelphia's a really large city.
Right.
And some people never go outside of that boundary of their neighborhood, which is amazing to me. Because by the time I was 18, 19 years old, I had traveled up and down the East Coast.
Yeah, now I can confirm that for myself, too. I was all up in California and different places traveling alone in Mexico. I mean, you know, because I wanted to, and I've been working since I was 15. So I saved a little bit of money, but a lot of people haven't had the opportunity to do those type of things, or they had a fear to go outside of their neighborhoods, and therefore they think that everything that exists in the world is a reflection of what they see in their own community and neighborhood. And that's not the real world. That's just a very small piece of the real world.
Yep.
Somebody just texted me and said, "Well, black people self-segregate too." I guess that's true. I mean, we, you know, I guess it's all about what you feel comfortable being around and who you feel comfortable being with. I mean,
if you walk into a room and there's three black people and there's 100 white people, what am I going to do is go off into a sea of white folks and try to pretend like the other three black people don't exist? That wouldn't make sense. But, you know, that just doesn't make sense. So you do want to make other black people at certain times feel comfortable, and then you either take them by the hand and help them to learn how to socialize with other white folks or whatever. You never want to abandon the only black folks in the room. That's just not a good idea, because in certain instances, we need to stick together. other.
And, you know, I'm kind of offended that you said that you had that experience, because all throughout going through, especially high school and college, I've always been around, you know, whites, blacks, Asian, Hispanic. And, you know, Chicago's one of those cities where so much culture and so much you got. You know, I got a chance to go downtown to go to Oktoberfest. They had a little German thing. And, you know, it's a lot of different things to experience, you know, going to different ethnic neighborhoods and, you know, just to get around and about. But Chicago, you know, the black people are so sedity here. You know, everybody thinks they shit don't stink, so they, you know, everybody's living in a illusion or something.
I mean, the taste of Chicago is something that I come to every year, and I happen to like that event. But even at the taste of Chicago, it's always segregated looking. Like, it's a huge open space, but it looks like there's dark-skinned people all huddled up. There's light-skinned. I don't know why I see this, but it's just what I see.
I believe it. I believe it.
You know, it's just
right.
What I see. But
well, I want everybody out there, people, the folks in charge, whoever's in charge of the gas, I don't know who you guys are, but whoever's in charge of the gasoline, please
Bush.
Get us some damn gas here in Georgia. We need gas. Okay?
Bush and Cheney.
I was going to go to North Carolina this weekend, but I'm afraid to drive up there because I don't want to be on the highway out of gas.
Right.
Let me transition to this Obama-McCain topic. Real quick before I move, Rico Estrada just sent me a text telling me, pass this info to you guys. Check out this book. It's called Why Are All the Black Kids Sitting Together in the Cafeteria? It's by Dr. Billy Tatum, who is the president of Spelman College. And I think it's a book about a study of why people self-segregate, which is not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, I just like to be around people that I'm, you know, people who are like me, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, man. I'm open to everyone, but you will see me gravitate to the black person in the room. If I walk into
right.
a strange room full of people, if the black person that I see looks inviting, I'll make my way to him or her, and then I venture
right.
out from there.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, now let me move into this next phase of this discussion, because I want to pass on some information. First of all, people, if you're not registered to vote, let me just give you all some info on some deadlines for people who need to register. Now, in the state of Georgia, of course, I live here in Georgia. If you live in Georgia like I do and you are not registered to vote, you have until October the 6th, which is, if I'm not mistaken, that's next week.
September 30th here.
September 30th in Chicago?
Yep.
Okay, September 30th. That's also next week. So October 6th.
Tom, I don't know why they keep saying Chicago. I'm in St. Louis this week.
Oh, St. Louis. I'm sorry. So it's September 30th in St. Louis?
And Chicago. And Indiana.
Oh, okay. I apologize. All right. So that's the Midwest area, Midwest.
The Midwest area.
September 30th. If you're in Maryland, everybody who's in Maryland, if you're listening to me from Maryland, if you're eligible to vote and you're not registered, Maryland people, you have October 14th is your deadline to register in order to vote in the November election. If you're in Virginia, people who live in Virginia, the Commonwealth of Virginia, you have up until 29 days before the November election, which I'm not certain what actual date that would be.
The election is on November 4th, right?
Right. So maybe, Hanif, if you can check that real quick.
Okay.
Also, in PA, everybody who lives in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, you have until October the 6th to register to vote, in order to vote in November's election. And for the people who are in North Carolina, and these states are battleground states, by the way. That's why I chose these states to highlight. If you're
Ohio is also one.
Yeah, Ohio as well. I didn't check Ohio, though. I didn't have time to check that earlier. If you're in North Carolina and you're listening to me right now, you have until 25 days before the election. So I say all that to say, if you're not registered to vote, you need to get on top of that right away. Because
it only takes a couple seconds, too.
Right. It takes a couple of seconds.
Yeah.
And it's just very important. I mean, we're living in a time like no other. And people, you think it's not important that you vote. Well, you know, I wish – Ms. Aviad, can you give them a reason why they really, I mean, why they do need to be registered and why they should actually vote?
I mean, in my opinion, because someone that looks just like me died for me to have the right to vote. I don't think that that person cared who I voted for, but for me to have the equal right as a human, because at one time African-American people were not considered to be human. We were considered to be animals. Right. So now we are considered to be human and we're respected, and we need to exercise this opportunity to vote, because there was some old man or some old woman many, many years ago who was beat down, some of them lynched and up in trees, hanging by nooses and everything else, and watered down with water hoses and everything because they were standing outside protesting us having the ability to be equals and to be able to vote. And now seeing a man like Obama being elected into a possible role of being into the White House like he's probably going to win and do. So, I mean, this is why it's very important.
I'm sorry, Tom. I have to interject to make a correction about these dates. Illinois is the Indiana is the 6th, Illinois is the 7th, and Missouri is the 8th of October.
Okay, so say that one more time, Hanif.
Illinois is the 7th, Indiana is the 6th, and Missouri is the 8th. Those are the deadlines, the 6th, 7th, and 8th of October.
Okay, so for those of you guys in that Midwest region, the 6th, 7th, and 8th are the deadlines there for...
The 6th is Indiana, the 7th is Illinois, the 8th is Missouri, and Ohio, I just saw Ohio. Ohio is...
Yeah, find Ohio. Find Ohio. Because that's another important one. I know that's going to be a battle.
Oh, it's also the 6th. It's also the 6th. Monday the 6th.
Okay, so there you go. We got right around that same time frame. Let's just say everybody needs to be registered by October the 6th.
At least the 6th.
Yeah, at least October the 6th. So, ladies and gentlemen, go out and be a part of something. Be a part of the movement. Because it's not okay for you to just sit on the sidelines on this one. You know, this is something that we all have to be engaged in. So let me move into, I guess, this whole McCain versus Obama type thing. Now, let me just throw this statistic out to y'all. For people who live in Philadelphia, 36% of blacks in Philadelphia are unregistered to vote. And now that's an atrocity. That's unacceptable, people. Y'all black people in Philadelphia, and I suspect that number is probably the same in other places and probably higher, but y'all need to go out and register to vote. You know, it's just ridiculous. Let me tell y'all something, too. For people who live in Georgia, y'all might be wondering about this whole convicted felon thing. I know some of our people in our community have that mark on their records. They're convicted felons. Well, if you're a convicted felon from the state of Georgia, and you live in the state of Georgia, you can... have your right to vote restored. But there are some restrictions that apply. If you are a convicted felon, but you have served your time in prison, you've completed your parole, you completed your probation, you no longer owe any fines, fees, or restitution to the court, if you have done all those things, you may re-register and have your right to vote reinstated. So all you need to do is contact your local election office, contact the Georgia Secretary of State's office. You can go to the naacp.org. And
is that just in Georgia, Tom?
That's state law here in Georgia. I don't know about anywhere else, because some states don't allow convicted felons to vote after they've been convicted of a felony. So, but here in the state of Georgia, convicted felons can have their voting rights restored once they have completed their prison time, once they've completed their parole and or probation, they've completed all fines, fees, and restitution, and they have no outstanding obligations to the court. They may have their right to vote restored. So I wanted to remind y'all. So if you're a convicted felon in Georgia and you're thinking, oh, well, I can't vote, well, you're wrong. You can vote. You can have your rights restored. If you fall into that criteria I just mentioned. So regarding McCain and Obama, Ms. Aviad, do you feel comfortable telling us who you're voting for?
Well, I'm voting for Obama. And at one time earlier in life, I was a Republican. during my teenage years, because I was raised in a very devout religious home and everything, and everything was centered around abortion and saving babies and such. And generally, the Republican Party has always been in favor of that. And then later in life, I realized that it was manipulation and control, and I wanted to have the right. I may believe in something, but at the same token, I think that people should have the right to choose certain things on their own. They should not be told. If a woman is raped by her brother, she's raped by a stranger, she should not be told that she cannot have an abortion. I may not be a person who would recommend an abortion to this woman, but I do not want to take away this woman's right to choose for herself. If there's any such thing as a hell and heaven and anything else, then that is something that maybe individuals have to deal with on their own. It is not up to us as individuals to play God and to tell someone else what God is thinking. I can never, ever, ever speak for God, but I can tell you something that's inspirational, and that's as far as I'll go with it.
Okay. And Ms. Aviance, let me ask you this. I'm getting a couple of questions from some of the listeners, and they want me to ask you. But one question is asking, do you think that all of the votes for Obama will be counted this time? You know what happened back in 2000 with Al Gore down in Florida? Yeah. And also
to be honest with you, and this is my opinion, and has been for probably several years now. Presidents have never ever been elected. Presidents are selected.
Yep.
And the only reason why I say that is because when I look at statistics and look at the number of presidents, I think we've had 40-something presidents. I don't know the exact number. It could be 48 or so. But of those presidents, each person that was elected into the White House, let's say 30-something of the 40-something have been all genetically connected to two people over in Europe. Not that that really matters to every single person in the world, because some people don't want to get into it that deeply. I just don't consider that to be a coincidence. So I feel that presidents are selected based on their bloodlines. Now, if Obama wins, I think he may win because he is also in that bloodline, because he's half white. And I think that his mother is his connection, because they say that he's some kin to Cheney. Cheney is in the White House.
He's Cheney's cousin of Cheney, actually.
Okay, so you see where I'm going with this? All the people who have been elected. Only person, well, I'll give this. Bill Clinton was not in the bloodline, but Hillary Clinton was in the bloodline.
But now, you want to know something, obvious? With Bill Clinton, if they weren't in the bloodline, they were also connected by the organization of either the Freemason, the Skull and Bones, or the Illuminati.
Yeah,
which
but
Bill
I'm
Clinton
saying to you
was
that
a Skull and
his
Bones.
His wife was in the actual bloodline, and the significance there is because he was probably being manipulated on many levels through his wife. Okay? So he was in the position as president, but his wife was in the bloodline, and that's probably why she was even allowed to even run at this point. And that's one of the reasons why she stuck by his side during that whole Monica Lewinsky fiasco.
Right.
Because she had to. Because she had to support that. It's not a conspiracy, because a conspiracy is something that you, me, and Hanif, Tom, could develop right now. It's an agenda, and an agenda can be something that goes on for hundreds of years or thousands of years, and it's just, you know, reinforced by the next generation.
Right, you just happen to be the player at that time.
Exactly.
Right. Okay, and there's another question coming in for you, Ms. Afghan. I think the listeners can really feel your wisdom on these matters. But here's the other question. It says, this person is writing in saying that apparently they've heard Joe Biden supposed to be stepping down from the vice presidential nominee due to health reasons, according to, I don't know where this info is coming from, but this person is asking, have you heard anything along those lines?
I have not, personally. Have you, Hanif?
I have not. I just recently seen him campaigning for Obama a couple of days ago. I don't know what state it was in, but I did hear him making some statements a couple of weeks ago saying that Hillary Clinton is more, or if is as qualified, if not more qualified than him. So if they were to say that he's stepping down due to those reasons, it would kind of coincide with maybe he's trying to open it up for Hillary. I don't know, but I haven't heard that.
Yeah, I haven't heard that in particular.
I will say that I think it was a strategic mistake on behalf of Obama not to pick Hillary. I mean, I understand why he may have not wanted to pick her. I think he should have picked her.
Well, I think he should have picked her also, but at the same time, you have to think that he's trying to, you know, find his own way, and then it would kind of be like having three presidents, I guess, maybe in the White House with Hillary and Bill, and, you know, and not Hillary, but, you know, a lot of people feel that she carries some type of a baggage with that, but then we got to look at how dirty McCain is, because I believe the only reason he picked Palin is to sway the women vote, and I don't think it's going to work that much to his advantage. He got the little bounce from the, you know, convention, but now his, you know, his lead is dwindling, and a lot of people are looking at her as she's not as experienced. There's a lot more of the female politicians that were a lot more experienced than Sarah Palin would ever be. But, I think he did make a major mistake, but, you know, again, he's trying to balance experience with, you know, his, well, what he has to offer, basically.
Right.
That was very overt.
Yeah. Not only that, too, but in terms of Palin, not only is she inexperienced, but she has a lot of scandal around her that, you know, the McCain campaign has been trying to quiet and quell. She's been involved with a lot of scandal in Alaska, you know, with the Troopergate situation where she tried to have that trooper fired, and questions now have come out today about the town where she was mayor. They wanted, the police department wants to charge rape victims for their rape exam. Now, that just came out today.
Lord have mercy.
So there's something coming out on this woman all the time, it seems.
Right.
But,
it's kind of ironic that a Republican has a pregnant teenage daughter. Not to say there's nothing wrong with that, but for just what most conservative people stand for, it just kind of doesn't fit into the mold traditionally.
Right. I mean, it's insanity almost. I mean, to even believe. That's why if he actually wins, McCain I'm speaking of, if he actually wins this election for whatever reason, there's something much bigger than you and I going on here. I mean, you know, we know that the last election, you know, with Bush, it was tainted and all those mispunched chats and all of that foolishness. We've used that same system for any number of years and never had, you know, that kind of a dilemma of chads not being punched all over the United States simultaneously. It has just never, ever happened before. Bush was not supposed to be the next president, or he wasn't supposed to be reelected into the White House again. But we allowed that to happen, and we cannot allow this to happen again. We just cannot. And when I went to vote in the primaries, and I used the electronic voting apparatus, and I just found it that...
Yeah, did you like that?
I like it, but the problem with it is I don't know if it's any better than the Chad situation. I can't say. It just looks like it is, but I can't say that it, you know, things are being recorded properly. I can't say that. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's my preference to use it, but I can't say whether or not they can manipulate the electronic data.
Well, my problem with the electronic voting is that there's no record to show once you cast that ballot. There's no paper record to show who
that
you voted
you get.
For.
But there's something that comes out the back of it that shows that you're doing it. Because as I was doing it, the lady stopped and something came out of the back of it, but it wasn't for me, it was for them.
Well, I'd just rather, if I'm going to vote electronically, I'd rather have something in my hand when I walk out of there showing who my selection was and things like that. And then it came out from, like, last year around this time, it came out that the makers of those electronic voting machines, the company Diebold, are closely connected to the Republican Party, and several of the top Republicans are heavily invested in that company and intertwined very deeply in that. Let me go to the phone.
Oh, really?
You should Google that. Google Diebold and just see what comes up, and you'd be surprised at what comes up on that.
Yeah, and I got a question for you when you get a chance.
Go ahead.
Um, Okay. Due to the economic fiasco that's going on with this bailout, which presidential candidate do you think will benefit from this economic status that we're in?
Well, in terms of votes?
Yeah, in terms of votes, which candidate do you think will benefit more from what Bush has traumatically done to the economy?
Well, the polls are already starting to show that Obama is getting a bump, because people do look to Obama more on the economic side of things as opposed to McCain. And vice versa with McCain, they tend to look to him more on the national security side of things.
Yeah.
So it definitely this was perfect timing, because it definitely has been a help for Obama, because John McCain has already shown he has no idea what's going on economically. You know, he came out just a few weeks ago. He came out and said the economy is sound. We're in a mental recession. You know, so clearly he is out of touch with what's going on when it comes to our economy. Let me take a phone call, because I want to get some of the people on the line and engage some of our listeners, and hopefully they will be able to talk to us and, you know, tell us who they are voting for and so forth. I have a caller online from a 443 phone number. You're live on the air with Tom. Who's speaking?
Hey, what's up, Tom? This is Enrique.
Hey, what's going on, Enrique? How are you?
Chilling. I was just driving, so that's why I'm listening on my screen. I'm driving from D.C. I agree.
Okay.
I think everybody should register to vote. They have no reason not to. Hey, Avianz. Hi, Anthony. How are you?
Hey, baby.
Hey, what's going on? And I think this action is really, really important. So I always, like, at work, at school, even when my house members, I instill the importance of voting. And I even said the whole felon thing, because a lot of people was running, like, the felon thing in my face. But I also gave them information about being a felon and you can still vote, just follow certain guidelines. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
As far as the Hillary thing, being a vice president, I think that, personally, I think Obama did the right thing, because the Clintons have a power of overpowering people, have a made
yeah.
overpowering. And I think that they would kind of washed him out. You know what I'm saying? Or made him seem obsolete.
You think Clinton would have overshadowed Obama as a VP?
Yeah, most definitely. Because you got to think, it's not only Hillary, it's her husband as well. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And Hillary,
right.
You know, mind you, like what everybody's saying, that this election showed their true colors. You still have some Hillary, well, you still have Clinton loyalists. You know what I'm saying? So anything they do is going to kind of overpower. So, yeah, she does might have experience, but Bill has a lot of experience. So a lot of things that will be done, you know, appropriately, it's going to probably seem like it's coming from them instead of Obama. So Obama did the
yeah.
right thing, personally.
And you know what's good about that? By him doing that, you know, that would put her in a position to have a lot more authority as far as being on the cabinet or something.
Exactly.
Right.
And another reason why I think that he was a smart move for not doing that is because it showed him that he could formulate his own opinion. He's not going to go on the basis of a popular thing. He's going to do what's right,
right
for him, which means he'll go what's right with the country. You know what I'm saying?
Hey,
that's
Enrique, if you don't mind me asking, who are you supporting for the presidential election?
Oh, Obama.
Okay.
Obama.
I think it was
funny, though, because when Obama didn't pick Hillary, I told a lot of my coworkers that McCain is going to probably pick a woman, and sure enough, it was a woman. That was a very calculated thing. I mean, I applaud him for him doing that, you know what I'm saying? But he should have, like, if you look at the debates or you look at the Republican convention, because I looked at, like, I watched both of them, he didn't really know
uh-huh.
who she was, you know what I'm saying?
So yeah.
If you don't really know who your running mate is going to be, that's a problem. You know, so all he was
mm-hmm.
just grinning and basically grinning, like reading from a script. He didn't know who this woman was. He still
right.
don't know this woman. Yeah, so.
Well, I
believe
that I believe the party picked this woman. I don't believe McCain picked her at all.
So why would they pick someone like that who does not have the experience that it requires? I mean, it's very clear. It's very overt. I mean, everyone knows it. It's not even about her daughter having a baby and all of that stuff. That's just like the icing on the cake.
Right.
But I'm saying this woman does not have the right history and past to support being in this role, period. And I'm not understanding how they think they can get away with it and people will still buy it hook, line, and sinker.
whatever, like she said, when she was at the event, like she said, Hillary Clinton made 18 million holes in the ceiling. She's on her thing is she's going to capture some of that. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's really funny because everybody's talking about the, like her daughter being pregnant, teenage pregnancy and kind of stuff. But instead of her becoming a victim, she's kind of becoming out to be a successor. People are like, you know, she's human, she makes mistakes. And I'm watching this on Fox News, you know, on all of these channels, and people are kind of rallying.
You know, Fox is going to spin it in that direction because Fox is very conservative, and you know, they may as well roll out the McCain banner and put it on the screen because that's the way they lean over there. You know, so I don't.
Right.
I don't.
But I just think it's very.
Fox is not an objective media outlet to me.
But for real. But what news channel is? They're all being backed by one or the other. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I mean, some of them. You know, you can argue that none of them are objective, but they certainly are not as biased as Fox News. That's for sure.
Right. I just found that to be curious because you know, there was a big splash for like a couple of weeks, and it kind of died down instantly. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, it's clear based on all that we have found out about this woman since she was selected. It's obvious they didn't properly vet her, you know, because of the stuff that's coming out on her now. We know they couldn't have possibly vetted this woman because if they had, they probably would never have picked her in the beginning. But like you and Ms. Avian said, it was very calculated, very, you know, careful how they picked this woman because they didn't want to capture that female vote because they knew that was the only way John McCain could possibly pull this whole victory thing off as he captures those female voters.
Right, and I kind of think it's insulting to the women voters too. You know what I'm saying? Because I know
I think it's insulting to the whole American public.
I would be really insulted. Like, okay, you know, she's not Hillary. She doesn't have the experience.
Right. She's a Republican. She's not Hillary. I mean, come on. Am I going to vote for her just because I'm a woman and she's a woman? That doesn't make any sense.
Right. Not only is she not Hillary, it's like who the hell is she?
Exactly.
Right. Absolutely.
I mean, that's the case.
Absolutely.
But listen, like I said, I'm driving, and I have a state police behind me, so I'm going to get off this phone. They're not supposed to be
calling.
All right,
okay, for your comments.
All right, thanks, guys.
Calling. All right, bye-bye. Okay, let's go to caller from a 585 phone number. That was very interesting what he had to say. Caller who's on the phone from the 585 number, you're live on the air. Who's this? Caller, hello? Okay. Let me go to a caller from a 404 phone number. Caller, can you hear me? Call from the 404. Hello? Okay. Also on the line is a caller from an unknown phone number. You're live with Tom. Go ahead. And looks like we don't have anyone there either. Ms. Aviat, I think he made some very interesting points, and Hanif, about this whole Sarah Palin. We really don't know much about her in terms of what she stands for, what her background is. We don't really know this woman.
Right.
You know, that might backfire because, you know, we don't know her, but it's like, you know, and I'm just not trying to be funny. Okay, let's be realistic. McCain looks like he's got one foot in the grave. Now, it's a scary situation if this man dies and she has to take power and control of this country. And it's like, is anybody thinking about this? Seriously,
yeah,
we could be in for a very scary-ass scenario.
That's the same thing I've been saying for a very long time. I mean, if this lady actually, McCain could drop at any moment, it seems, just looking at him. He looks like he could go out. He can't.
I mean,
and
I don't want anyone to die, but clearly he is not going to make it through the first term.
Clearly he's not a spring chicken.
Clearly.
He can't even lift one arm over his head. So
it is no shade, but I swear, you know.
So I'm thinking, okay, if he goes out of here, what, I mean, and this woman has already shown she's a warmonger also. You know, she's talking about we may have to go in and attack Iran and do a preemptive strike. You know, I'm just concerned that she may do just like Bush has done and go in there.
Oh, it'll be worse than Bush because if she's on a period, it might be, no, let me stop.
Yeah, next thing we know, we're back in a war again, you know, another war. Let's see if we can get another caller on the line. I don't have many calls tonight, but the ones who we do have, I appreciate you for listening. Let's go to a caller from a 908 phone number. Go ahead. Caller from the 908, you're live on the air. Go ahead. Hello? Okay. I have a caller holding from a 347 from New York. 347, go ahead. Caller from the 347 number, please go ahead. Okay. And a caller who's holding from a 917 phone number. You're live on the air. Hello?
Tom?
Yeah, hi. Who's speaking?
Hi, Tom. It's Francis.
Hey, what's going on?
Hey,
how are
Francis.
Hi, Miss Avias. How are you?
I'm great.
And say hi to Hanif.
Hi, Hanif. How are you?
Hey, Francis. Fanny pack.
Thank you.
Francis, are you registered to vote?
Sorry, sir. I am.
What are you going to be doing this year? Who are you going to be voting for?
Obama, of course.
Okay. Are you excited about having this opportunity to vote for a black man for president?
I am, but I'm very scared that, like, a lot of people who, like, are talking about voting aren't going to vote. You know what I'm saying? Like, the statistics of people that aren't voting are ridiculous, and they're through the roof. So, you know what I'm saying? Like, I think that a lot of people want to vote for him, but it's actually getting out there and voting.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I think that the ball is in his court that he can actually win this, but I think the people have to actually get up and vote.
Right, right. So. What do you think about Sarah Palin?
I'm very scared that, you know, in the event, like, God forbid that he actually does become president. Like, that is already a gagger. But if in the event that something does happen to him and she does become president, she doesn't know anything about anything to run the country. You know what I'm saying? Like, she barely had experience running some little, you know, redneck town, you know, so why, you know what I'm saying? Like, to run the entire country, I don't think she's experienced at all.
Like, she's what, governing 900 and some people?
Exactly. I think she's way in over her head, and she knows it. So to act,
do you think Obama made a mistake by not selecting Hillary as the vice president?
Oh, absolutely not.
Yeah,
absolutely
I don't think that
not.
She,
I mean,
yeah.
How could he, you know what I'm saying, how could he really do that after the things she said?
Exactly.
Has she not went to that extreme?
Exactly. They've already hit each other low, you know, below the belt.
More so on her end
than
his.
Exactly.
Yeah, more so on her end than his. He tried not to really, really hit her below the belt, but, you know, of course, he had to say certain things. But
exactly.
She
and there was even, like, you know, commercials about, you know, how incompetent he was as a president. There was no way that he was going to be able to pick her.
Right.
Did anybody get into that subliminal message in that commercial that she had when their phone was ringing in the middle of the night? The subliminal message behind that,
yeah,
like,
I saw that.
When the phone rings for the white woman at 3 in the morning, she's up on the computer and she's doing this, that, and the other, and then they show the phone ringing when the black guy, and he's in the bed asleep. In other words, they're trying to say, when you call that white woman, she's going to be, you know, up and about, and when you call that black man, where is he going to be? Somewhere laid up asleep. You know, it's a real subliminal message. And it took somebody else to point that out to me, and I'm like, you know what? They could possibly be saying that.
Wow.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah, you're absolutely right, and that's very unfortunate. But I think this campaign has a lot of subliminal.
That's the thing
going
I don't understand,
on.
Though. It's like, what other meaning behind that commercial could there really have been?
You know what?
That's pretty obvious.
It's nothing. It had to be obvious because I watched it several times. They didn't really run it where I'm at that much. But then I looked. I said, so it's 3 a.m. So you're trying to tell me you call this white woman at 3 a.m. She's up working doing something, and you call this black man at 3 a.m. He's laying in the bed peaceful and asleep. So, you know, it's not like they're, you know, out. They're inadvertently saying, you know, well, when you need this man, when you need a black man, you ain't gonna be able to find him. In other words,
right.
That's what I got from it.
Mm-hmm.
Quite disturbing.
Well, yeah.
That's crazy.
It's very disturbing. Francis, did you have any other comment that you wanted to make?
No, that's it. Have a
okay,
good night.
Well, thanks a lot for listening, Francis.
All right,
let's go to another caller from Atlanta. 678 number, you're live with Tom. Hello.
What's going on, Tom?
Hey, what's going on?
This is Stefan Blonick.
Hey, what's up, Stefan? I know you have a lot of interesting things to say about this whole election 08 and all the politics going on in our nation.
I do. I wanted to greet your other guests as well. How are you guys doing?
Hey, Stefan, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Doing
well.
We have Miss Aviance
and Hanif Carter on the line.
Oh, Miss Aviance, one of my favorite people.
Oh,
thank you.
But Stefan, what's on your mind? Where do you want to begin? Because I know you have a lot of, you're really involved with politics and this whole election, and I think you have a really deep grasp on how important this election is. So where would you like to begin?
I appreciate that. I'm still very involved in politics. I recently moved to New York, but I am concerned about a few different things, and I do have a lot of things to say, so again, I will try to be brief. One of the things that is disturbing to me primarily is the notion that people are being told that they can't vote or that they don't have the right to vote because they are convicted felons. This is an issue for me because actually a lot of states have clauses where if your conviction has been fulfilled and your probation, if you receive probation afterwards, has also been fulfilled, you then have been restored the right to be able to vote. But I'm concerned because I don't think that message is necessarily being communicated to people. And so then the assumption is that, you know, a person who doesn't have that information is under the assumption that because they are a felon that they can't vote in this election, which is false. And, you know, Georgia being one of those particular states that has the clause where after your particular probation has been fulfilled, your right to vote has been restored. So one of the things that I would like to definitely put out is for you to contact your local governmental offices and really get in touch with someone who can help you determine whether or not you're actually qualified to vote. And I know that Obama has an extensive list of information and resources on his website, so that would definitely be a resource I would check as well. But I don't know where this rumor came from and how this gets started and how it's being perpetuated, but it's definitely out there. A couple of emails have come across me just within the past 48 hours about this, and so I had to uncover some stuff in Georgia, and that's when I learned about all the drama that's going on with that.
Right. Well, hopefully we won't, you know, have this weapons of mass destruction and weapons of false information going out this year like we had in the last election, because we know that the Republicans are very good at trickery and scheming and conniving. You know, I've never seen a group of people who will go to almost to no length to retain power. I mean, it's almost like these people will do anything. We've seen them steal an election. We've seen them not count votes. We've seen them disenfranchise people. I mean, it's like, what else will they try in order to maintain power and to keep black people and poor people from voting?
I'm a little confused by that statement because I know that, you know, you being a graduate of the AUC Center, that you've taken a few history courses, including African-American history. And one of the things that I've learned about history being one of my favorite subjects, is that those who have power certainly don't want to give it up.
Right.
And that's a condition of the power and privilege dynamic that, unfortunately, our society operates in. Those who have power want to keep it and continue to oppress those so that they can continue to have the power. This election is very important, it's very important for a few different reasons. It's symbolic
now,
that – I'm sorry.
Okay, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that it's symbolic in the fact that we do have an African-American identifying candidate running for office. And I want to be clear about that because there's a lot of hoopla around about him being of mixed races, but I'm really clear that I go with what people identify as. And that gentleman identified as African-American,
sure.
So that's how I'm going to call it.
Now, Stefan, why were you confused about what I said about the Republicans and trickery?
Well, because I think that there have been other demonstrations of oppression that definitely.
Well, I mean, absolutely. The Democrats did it back during the Civil Rights Movement, but I'm talking about modern times. I'm not talking about. And let me be clear. I'm neither Democrat nor Republican. I'm a Baptist. So I will say that. No, but I'm independent. I'm independent, but I lean Democratic, because they're more in line with how I believe. But there are some platforms in the Republican Party that I do support, like gun rights. I'm a staunch gun rights supporter and things along those lines. But I'm mostly aligned with the Democrats. And I'm talking about in 2000, the outright blatant stealing of an election. You hadn't seen anything like that happen in our history, I don't think.
I think that the party process is a little bit much, and that, like I think I heard Ms. Avion say before, that could lead into a couple of other different conversations. So I typically don't try to go that direction. But what I will say about the party alliances is that I am an independent also. I tend to vote based on the issues, not who the party is and all those kinds of things, because the reality is that the political parties, I don't give a shit how they present themselves. The political parties are dirty, and they all have other things going on. They all have ulterior agendas and motives and things. And so, you know, you can really only go with what's presented before you, which are the issues, and doing your best to, you know, kind of read between the lines and discern how things will impact you and the community that you live in order to make the, you know, I guess what you would consider the best decision for your vote. Mm-hmm. But, I haven't heard my girlfriend call in today, Drama.
I tried to reach Drama earlier. I sent him a message, and I don't know if he got the message. He didn't respond back to me.
She is a stark Hillary supporter, and I know that she would have a whole lot to say on this political matter.
Well, a lot of these Hillary supporters need to just face the facts, face reality. Hillary didn't win, okay?
Now, Tom, don't do that, because I also was a strong, staunch Hillary supporter at one point in time.
I mean, and you can be a Hillary supporter. You can send her a note or send her an email saying how great of a job she did. But Hillary did not win
She didn't win. I just, you know, felt she had a lot more experience, but it is what it is. And like I said, I'm going with Obama. And, you know, I'm not saying that I vote Democrat across the board 100% of the time, because I have voted for a couple of Republicans here and there, but never for a presidential election.
Right.
Well, there was also a comment made earlier about Governor Pollin.
Right.
Yeah.
I thought that was interesting. One of the things that
which comment are you talking about?
Well, the comment was about her supposed celebrity status that she's acquired based on all the, you know, the media attention she's gotten with some of the other things that are going on in her personal life. One of the things that I've seen circulating around the internet, which I thought was really interesting, was a few feminist groups that I happen to be connected to sent out emails to their group, and I'm a part of
it.
So I got it. Well, so anyway, so I got the message, and and it was basically about, instead of, you know, emailing her and giving her all this life and all this attention, why not just donate money to the Planned Parenthood on her behalf. and so that was like...
Wait a minute, they did what? They donated money to Planned Parenthood on her behalf?
Yes, isn't that hilarious? And so, like, people are actually doing this in large numbers, believe it or not.
Wow.
And so, like, I thought that was a clever yet very blatant way to kind of, you know, show your discontent with, you know, her policies and the way that she views things. I'm really challenged with this whole notion that our community is so vexed and so has, there's so many isms going on in our community that we would choose a white candidate over a black candidate just because we don't want to vote black because of what that may make us look like or how they may make us seem. When Anglos have not had any issues doing that over the past 200 plus years that this country has been around. All of a sudden, we got to be a victim because we decide to vote for someone, you know, and one of the reasons being is because we can identify with them. I don't think that that's an issue, though. And I'm really challenged when people say that, because I think most people vote for people that they can identify with. And it would make sense that black people would vote for a black person. You can identify with somebody who's black. Like,
in most
cases. But you know what? But now, wait a second, because every black person is not always about you know, being for black people. And I gave you an
example earlier.
You're
right. I know a lot of black people that are prejudiced against their own.
Attorney General Thurber Baker right here in Georgia is another one who, just because he's black, you know, he's not necessarily down with the black cause, because he's the one who has this black man on death row right now, about to be executed tomorrow. He set the execution date, knowing full well that they have a request for a hearing pending before the U.S. Supreme Court. So
I don't
vote race. I vote my interests, and that's where a lot of people are confused. And so, especially some of these dumb white folks who are more wrapped up in the fact that this man's black, and not paying attention to the fact that the Republicans are about to take all their money away from him, and when they get ready to retire, they won't have anything to retire on because Social Security is about to disappear. So I vote my interests, and my interests. I believe that this man, Barack, is more in line with what my interests are as an American and, you know, being able to, you know, live a middle-class life. I mean, I don't think that the Republicans in any way, shape, or form can help me sustain my middle-classness, if you will, if that even makes sense.
And I don't think that, as a tax-paying citizen that you should have to validate your voting decision to people just because they think that you're voting for him because he's black.
Well, you know.
I remember reading some time ago, and Hanif, I actually was a staunch Hillary supporter when this election first began as well. So I have to admit that. But I remember reading some time ago that there are mega superstars and rappers and all these kinds of folks who are also endorsing McCain, which I find to be really interesting.
Well, you know, the rich people support the Republicans because the Republicans are the party of the rich and big business, you know. So I'm not surprised at all that you have entertainers supporting this man.
Yeah, a majority of people in the entertainment industry are supporting Barack Obama, though.
And he wants to push the Democratic stimulus package, which is going to benefit low- and middle-income families, which I think is a good thing.
There's a good health care proposal, I believe.
Yeah, and one of the other things that I thought was interesting is that he's also a supporter of the U.S. government making a formal apology in terms of slavery, which I unfortunately think is probably going to be a position that, you know, loses some support for him, but...
I don't really care about no apology for slavery. What I care about is when I get ready to retire, will my 401k and Social Security be there for me, or is it going to be lost in the stock market crash? That's what I'm more concerned about. So,
right.
It depends on how many more of these firms go under. Bank of America just bought Merrill Lynch.
Well, I'm just saying that to say that a lot of people are having confused about what's important. Who cares about an apology for slavery? I mean, obviously slavery was a terrible thing. And
the dance was slow and everything else, and I would be more concerned about reparations.
Absolutely.
It doesn't matter now.
Yeah.
Well, I think a little bit differently on the issue, and I have to be honest with myself about that, because although I personally would not necessarily feel obliged to advocate on behalf of an apology, I think that there are people that would benefit on an emotional and psychosocial level.
I'm talking about tangibly, though. I'm not talking about emotionally, because, you know, emotions change with the wind. I'm talking about a tangible, something tangible that you can actually put in a person's hand. You know, y'all want an apology for slavery. Why don't y'all, and when I say y'all, I'm talking about the folks. I'm speaking in general, but folks who want to advocate for a slavery apology, y'all go advocate for student loans, you know, for more money for student loans, for Pell Grants and things like that. Advocate for more money for student for lunches for kids in school. Advocate for more money for after-school care. More money for police in our communities. You know, kinds of things. More money for health care. How about advocate for health insurance and things of that nature for uninsured.
Those things are all very important.
Yeah, my position is they're more important than some apology. I mean, what can you do with an apology for slavery? Can you go to the bank and cash that and go buy groceries to feed your family? I mean, I'm keeping it real, and I'm not attacking you Stephon.
No,
I'm
not at all.
I'm keeping it real. Like, can I walk into Kroger right now, or can I go to the BP or the Chevron? I'm gonna go to the Chevron and give the Chevron people my slavery apology.
And tell them,
fill me up on pump number one. And they're gonna laugh at me, and they might even call the cops.
No, you tell them they owe you that shit. No.
I understand your perspective. I definitely see the utility in your position. But I can't help but wonder how appropriate still it would be for this to take place.
I'm not saying it's inappropriate.
I think this is coming from a place, again, of racism. I think it's important to acknowledge the fact that although a lot has not necessarily been done in terms of completely compensating other nationalities and ethnicities for the wrongs that have happened by the U.S. government, like, things have been done. And I'm not really convinced that enough has been done in terms of our community. As a matter of fact, when you look at the Native Americans and you look at the things that the U.S. government has done to kind of right their wrongs, you know, some may think it's not enough. Some people say, well, you know, we could use more, but something was done. Something was done with the Jews. Something was done with the Irish. There were things that are being done for people, but in terms of us, it's like I feel like we keep getting the short end of the stick. And so I want to be clear that my position isn't necessarily that we should be asking for an apology, just asking for an apology just for apology's sake. But I think that there is a clear message behind the U.S. government acknowledging the responsibility in the fact that we are in the place and the space that we are as a community, large in part because of the shit that's been going on for years that no one has acknowledged.
Well, I mean, but again, to acknowledge it now, we all know slavery happened. Nobody's living in a vacuum. So for Obama to come out and apologize today or tomorrow or when he's president, I mean, what is that really going to change? Is the price of gas going to go down by him giving us a policy? See, this is what I'm saying. This, we are being distracted. We're majoring in the minor here.
Obvious.
Do you agree with me? We're majoring in the minor.
I understand exactly where I understand where you both are coming from, and I've had many of these thoughts over the years. And my thing is this: I do think that we are owed an apology. I really do. However, I don't know how much good it would do at this point, but I do think that there are a handful of people, such as the person that we're speaking to on the phone, who would be able to appreciate that. But I think the everyday person who is really living check to check and everything, that would go over their head and they wouldn't even understand it. However, it's still acknowledged and it's still put out into the universe amongst the other acknowledgments that have been passed on over the years. But I think it doing the greatest good right now in 2008, I don't see that. But I think that it's something that probably should be done and is long overdue, but I don't know how effective it's going to be in the biggest picture. And I think that's what Tom was saying. Tom just said it in a more humorous way, but I see both sides of that. I really honestly do.
I certainly think it's important that social service programs to increase funding to social service programs, especially in urban and inner city areas.
Right.
I definitely see the utility in that. I mean, I work in a service provision. I work in HIV and AIDS prevention, so I see the utility in
that.
But at the same time, I just feel like, why not address it on both levels? Why not? You know, you have a black man who's potentially about to become president to be able to affect change in some capacity. And so working on the end in terms of creating programs and opportunities for inner city youth and garnering the support from the Democratic-led House at the moment, I think would be key in not just moving change in terms of those social service programs, but also moving the country in a different direction in terms of the way that we are perceived as a community and the way in which we engage ourselves because of that perception.
Right.
That's all I'm coming from.
Yeah, okay. I know. I know that's where you were really coming from. It was just a little humorous because, I mean, there's so many things that are happening right now that are so exhausting that when you hear statements like the one that you made initially about, you know, we should get this acknowledgement, it's lost in the sea of everything else that's really going on that is really on the surface right now. You know, I paid a lot of attention to that concept many years back, and now that we're in 2008, I don't think it's a bad idea. I just don't know what type of impact it really will make on the most people. I think there will be a small amount of people who will benefit emotionally from that, and maybe, you know, there'll be some tangible things that can occur out of it, probably very small, but something is better than nothing.
Or maybe in a forward-thinking kind of way, maybe Barack becoming the next president of the United States might make up for that in some way.
Right, and that's kind of what I think. I mean, honest to God, and I honestly, and I don't want to cut you off, but I do feel very strongly about this next statement. I am very clear that all life, on this planet as we understand it, according to a Georgia scientist, came from Africa. So if nobody else ever tells me that, it won't even matter, because the oldest bones that have ever been found on this planet was of an African woman. So I know we rule things. Now,
and you know what? They took this land from us, not to cut you off, but if you want to go back to the Moors, well, the Moors, that'll be a whole different show, though.
Yeah, I know. You know what I mean? But I'm just saying in that sense, I mean, we need to educate each other. We need to educate our children especially, and to let our children know that even if the government never, ever, ever, ever gives us reparations or anything else, you must understand who you are and the stock that you came from. And the oldest bones on the planet, meaning anything walking on two legs right now, whether it has slanted eyes, yellow skin, dark skin, light skin, white skin, Jewish skin, it all came out of Africa. Now, how it develops into these individual things, I don't know.
You know what, Ms. Andrea, one thing that I always hear, that there's this talk radio show that I listen to here in Atlanta a lot. And this lady, the host of the show, always says, well, if you give them reparations, I mean, just imagine you go to the projects and, I mean, just think of a notorious project in D.C. or here in Atlanta, let's say Bankhead. Okay, you go to Bankhead and you drop reparations on a community like that where they've had, okay, somebody's giving some applause. I don't know how that happened. Imagine. I'm sorry, y'all. Excuse me one second.
Are you okay, Tom?
I'm fine, yes. Okay, just imagine that you guys go to Bankhead and you drop reparations in Bankhead in an area where the people, first of all, have had no training, no education in most cases. They have no idea. You know, you give them $100,000, hypothetically. What do they do with it? They turn around and they spend it all right back. They give it all back to the white man. They go to the mall. They go straight to
Coach
the mall.
Coach Fendi.
Stunner shades, rims, stereos, speakers.
It's not going to make the biggest impact because they don't understand what it really, really means.
Yeah, but Ms. Avias, y'all didn't even mention, not to mention the rim shops. Do you know how many rim shops?
I said the rims.
Oh, you said the rims. I mean,
yeah,
the rims, the 12-inch speakers, the amplifiers, the stunner shades, you know, the paint jobs.
Right. So my point was, I mean, it's just throwing reparations at a group of people when there's no change in the mindset doesn't really do anything for them. They'll be back at square one as soon as the money runs out.
Well, I definitely want to acknowledge that this is your show, so let me start there. I don't want to appear argumentative.
Thank you.
But I'm a little concerned about your analogy because, like, I'm not exactly sure that it would be probable for it to happen that way. First of all,
well, I'm not sure that it wouldn't happen that way. Okay, let's try to do it in a different way. What happens when a group of people, let's just say you got your typical group of individuals riding through the hood. They get hit from behind. Nobody in the car is hurt, but what does everybody in the car do? They fall out.
I'm going to jump out of the car and I'm going to lay in the middle of the street, Tom.
Okay,
So you get a settlement. You get a $3,000-$5,000 settlement from the insurance. What do you do with that money, Ms. Abgat? If you don't have the necessary tools on how to manage that money, you go to the mall and you spend it, or you go to the car, you know, real
new
shop.
New Jordans, new jeans.
I'm not saying that's
what's going to happen
everybody.
With it. No, but 90% of the people are going to do just
90%.
That because their education is not there. This is what I was stressing a moment ago, is that it is up to us as individuals to educate every other person we meet, and especially the children, because they are what's left of our future. So, I mean, educate. If you don't understand what reparations are and why we should give them, it doesn't matter if we give them. To me, I could care less about reparations. If I don't understand what it is and why I'm getting it and why it's important, it doesn't matter to me. It doesn't make sense to even give it if the people in question don't even understand what it is and why they should get it.
Absolutely.
Ask the Jews, whatever the Jews have gotten, David, trust me, it has been drilled in their heads and forced into their system, whether they continue to practice it or not in the future, but they can tell you everything backwards and forwards as to why they should get it. Black folks, we don't know. We're so concerned, and it's not necessarily always our faults, but we're so concerned with the everyday, mundane, sustaining ourselves and struggling every day that we can't see past that. We cannot see past our front doors.
Right.
We can't see past our front doors.
There's a lot more past that front door. So, Stefan, I mean, it's okay for us to argue because that's what, I mean, anytime we talk in politics, you're going to argue. The thing is, we're having an educational, intellectual conversation tonight. But the whole idea of reparations, I'm not too big on. I mean, I wouldn't say no to it, but I think that there's a whole lot more that's way more important that we can be focusing on the immediate and that will be tangible to our community to help us, as opposed to, you know, some reparations. And one of those things is voting. I mean, we really got to get out and we really got to vote in this election and get Obama in there. And then, of course, if Obama doesn't do what he said he was going to do, then guess what? We bounce him out and put somebody else in there. That's the whole nature of politics, and that's the whole nature of being in a democratic society. We get to vote on who we want to have as our leaders.
One of the things I can say I was really pleased at seeing the other day, like a week or so ago here in D.C., you know, you have the local voting, like for the city council and all of that. And I went to do that. I mean, my phone showed out. I lost the software on my phone on that very day and went and got a replacement phone. And when I got over to the polls, because I was determined that I was going to get there, I had 7 minutes left in order to vote. But at any rate, one of the little guys from my neighborhood, one of the little trade boys from my neighborhood, I saw him in there voting for the very first time. And
really?
I felt so good about that because I felt like maybe something I said in conjunction with the fact that his mother was there with them as well, because I talked to all of the, you know, people that I come in contact with, gay, straight, or whatever, about how important it is to vote. And if you don't have a ride, if you can fit in my car on the day in question, I'll pick you up and I'll take you. Or if it's an old person in my neighborhood that needs a ride who is registered, don't worry about it. We'll make it happen. But at any rate, he was there with his mother, and I overheard her saying, you know, would you fill that out right there and go sit down and do this? You know, but this is a guy, by just looking at him, you wouldn't even think that he would have even been in there. And I said, it made me feel so encouraged, like there is a chance. There is hope. Even with
Absolutely.
Just that one, out of all the guys I know around here, he was the only one that was in there, but at least he represented hope for me in the future of the other young people.
Right. Let me take another call. Stefan, stay with us for a moment. Let me try to get this caller in from the 908 number that called back. Caller from 908. Hello. Caller. Hello. Okay. Let me try the caller from the 347 number. Caller. Hello from 347.
Hey.
Hey. How are you?
Hey.
Disconnected because it's a serious subject tonight. Go on.
Right. Okay, I have a caller from an unknown phone number. Are you there, caller?
calling from the unknown phone number. Hello.
Okay, we lost him. Stefan, do you do understand where Ms. Abias is coming from, right?
Yeah, I do understand, actually. And I agree. I agree that there are other
more pressing issues, again, considering the economy, considering the state of emergency we're in public health with HIV and AIDS, and Georgia being number one for syphilis, you know, the recent statistics that were put out by the American Journal of Public Health. So, yes, I do. I do think, though, as well, and I may have not necessarily communicated myself clearly, but I do believe that that reparations could be a part of the conversation. I'm just not convinced that it necessarily needs to be reparations to individuals. I would like to see the reparations look like additional funding to these social service programs.
I agree.
Well, you know what? Now that I can agree with. Now, as opposed to just giving money to individuals, I would say if you want to give reparations, you know, why don't you give some reparations to some of these HBCUs that are struggling, or to, you know, Head Start programs, things like that. Now that I can get behind that, but to just take money and throw it at people,
I would be concerned about how would you determine whether or not who should get it. I mean, that's part of the other reason why I wasn't really connecting to the concept of just giving it to people.
Well, I think if you're black in America, you deserve something. No matter who you are. Because being black in this country is what we need more of
is education, whether it's related to health or whether it's related to, you know, setting yourself up to gain a career out of it or something. I mean,
Ms.
this Abias, is what.
Are you familiar with are you aware of the program that Oprah Winfrey did here in the country,
where she
went to urban. And rural or urban and ghetto areas of Chicago and a couple of places in the South, I think in Mississippi. And her and her staff apparently went around and assessed how young people would spend whatever $100 billion that she would give to that local community. And
I remember her talking about it, but I didn't follow how it played out.
Yeah, it was really, really deep, and it kind of talks about some of the things that you and Tom were just talking about. But essentially, she was wanting to assess the readiness for people to be able to move forward in their lives. And so she said that she would give this money away, which she fully intended to do. So she went to these areas, and she assessed what some of the youth needs were, and a lot of them, especially here in this country, anyway, in Chicago and in the South. They were talking about, you know, video games, designer clothes, you know, those kinds of things. She took her notes and all that kind of stuff. She went over to West Africa, I believe it was Ghana.
Right.
And she assessed where those kids were. And their response was, you know, new computers for school, competent teachers, having their schools rebuilt so that they could have, you know, functioning water systems and all this kind of stuff, and so she put her money over there, of course, and she received a lot of flack for it, especially from people in our community, because they're like, well, you could have put your money into the black communities here, but her response was that our communities here aren't necessarily, at least the ones that she assessed, weren't necessarily ready to move forward and really utilize the money that she was providing in a way that would benefit not just them, but also the overall community.
I thought that was really interesting. That is very interesting, but the unfair part of that is that they don't have the westernized exposure that we have. You know, we grow up watching TV and all of this stuff. So to be fair, and not saying that parents don't have the ability to cut the plug off the TV and everything else, but I'm just saying generally we don't do that. So our children and as well as the adults are influenced by what we see on TV, and we're brainwashed right here in America with this foolishness. Over there, they're struggling to get glasses of water that's clean and drinkable, food and all of that kind of stuff. So, yes, they would say new computers and things as opposed to us because we know we have so many other options. They don't know what options are because they don't have the bare necessities of life there. We have an overabundance of almost everything, and almost any and everything is obtainable, whether you steal it, you buy it, you work for it, or whatever, we normally can get it. So, yeah, they're going to say something totally different from us. But I do understand why she put the money there, because they are ready to move forward. We don't have enough sense, most of us, to separate the fact that, yeah, we know that we can buy True Religion jeans right now, but it's more important to get a new computer so that I can advance myself educationally so I can make an impact on the planet, and especially in America where I live.
Right, exactly. There you go.
So,
well, listen, Stefan, it's been a pleasure having you
on
tonight to engage us as we begin to wrap the show up. So, Stefan, I can, it's a safe bet you're going to vote Obama.
Of course.
Okay. Well, again, we do want to thank you for your input tonight, and maybe you can come back with us again when we have another educational topic. Tomorrow, I'm scheduled to have on the show R.R. Chanel, and we're going to discuss all things drugs and substance abuse and addiction.
Oh, Lord.
And you guys know R.R. has told his story about how he battled drug addiction and has been clean for a number of years. And I chose that topic because I feel like the drug use and abuse in our community is just totally out of control and rampant. And it's so out of control so much now, Ms. Atiyah, that it's almost like become the norm for the kids in the scene that if you don't do the drugs, it's almost like something's wrong with you instead of it being
right,
the other way around. There used to be a time when people would get high, especially if you were doing like the hard drugs like coke and stuff like that. It used to be that the girls would try and hide it and go, you know, try and not let you see them doing coke. Now doing coke is like smoking weed, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
It's not hidden anymore. The girls just do it, and it's like fun to them. I don't know, but I'm alarmed by it. I'm concerned by it. I think the drug use is also contributing to the explosion in the STD rate.
Absolutely.
So I think we need to discuss it. And tomorrow we're going to take a look at that. And we have on with us the icon, RR, who will help us to explore addiction. And hopefully
Great.
We can get some people out there to some places where they can get some help, because a lot of people walking around addicted don't realize that they're addicted. They think they can stop doing coke whenever they want to. They think they can stop smoking weed. And they realize after a day or so of not having it that I have to have it, you know. And you realize you are addicted. And when you're spending $30, $40, $50 a day smoking weed, that's not no regular, you know, just get high for fun type thing. That's a serious addiction.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Somebody just sent me an IMC. They hope the House of Herrera and the House of Loren will be actively listening. I don't know what that's supposed to mean.
I don't know either. But anyway, Stefan, again, thank you so much. Will you come back with us again sometime?
Yeah, give me a shout. Let me know what's going on.
Okay, thanks a lot. And thank you for telling all your friends about the show tonight. Ms. Aviat and Hanif, thank you, too, for being a part of this.
I just want to say one more thing, Tom.
Uh-huh.
Regardless if you vote or not, well, I want everyone to vote, but regardless if Obama wins or not, please don't forget to vote for the local races that include the aldermen, the House, the Senate, because in the event that we do get a Republican in the White House, it will be very difficult for him to get his policy set forth with the Democrats in control of the House and the Congress, you know?
Absolutely. I think local politics is just as important as national politics. A lot of people don't realize how important the local races are.
Or that they're connected.
Right, until some city council makes some stupid rule about you can't walk around with your pants sagging, and then to try to put people in jail for sagging pants. I mean, how ridiculous is that? Which they tried to do here in Atlanta, and it didn't work. So, but again, Ms. Aviat, thank you. It's been a very interesting conversation, and you as well, Hanif.
No problem.
I hope that the people who did listen tonight got something out of this. And, you know, whoever you vote for, like Hanif said, the most important thing is go vote. And if you don't realize how important voting is, just go Google the name Medgar Evers. And that ought to compel you to vote, if nothing else. So I want to thank you guys.
And we'll talk to you all tomorrow. Ms. Aviat Tanib, once again, thank you so much. You've been a big help. I couldn't do this without you all.
Have a wonderful night.
All right, Tom. All right, Ms. Aviat.
Bye, Hanif. Bye, Ms. Aviat. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to leave you all with one of my favorite songs. But before I go, I want to remind you all, first of all, thank you all for listening. And thank you all for being with me tonight. And whatever you do, don't let the kids serve you, but you serve the kids, okay?
Jesus. God, I could have been dead and gone.